Well, hello and welcome to Church Online this Sunday, the 3rd of May. My name's Brennan McLaughlin and I'm one of the ministers here at Erwood Anglican. And I want to begin with a story about a preacher who was preaching one Sunday and he noticed that one of his parishioners was starting to doze off. And so this preacher decided to up his volume a bit in the hope of waking the guy back up. But the louder he preached, the more the guy dropped off until finally he started snoring. Well, the preacher, a little miffed at this point, had to tell the gentleman next to him, look, can you just nudge Jeff and wake him back up again? To which the gentleman said, well, why do I have to do it? You're the one that put him to sleep. Well, friends, I tell that story not just because I hope not to bore you today, but because we're looking at the topic of rest. And this feeling of being rested and rejuvenated is becoming a little more elusive in modern society, is it not? Let me read to you something that George Carlin said. He was one of the comedians from the 70s and 80s. He said, the paradox of our time in history is that we have taller buildings but shorter tempers, wider freeways but narrower viewpoints. We spend more but have less. We have more medicine but less wellness. We have more conveniences but less time. We drink too much, spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too much, get too angry, watch too much TV, stay up too late, and get up too tired. I wonder if that doesn't ring true for many of us. Now, look, one of the advantages of the coronavirus lockdown is that it has forced many of us to have to slow down. For many of us, we have less commute time. We might have less work hours. Some of us, sadly, have no work hours. But the question I want to look at today is, has slowing down helped us to feel more rested and rejuvenated? Now, the answer should be a resounding yes, should it not? But my suspicion is that for many of us, slowing down has not necessarily led to us feeling more rested. And that means there's something wrong. Now, for some of us, the COVID-19 crisis has meant more work, or at least more stress, because we don't know where our next paycheck is coming from. But that's not what I want to talk about today. What I want to talk about today is those of us who do slow down, and even though we do slow down, our rest is for some reason not doing its job. We still wake up most days feeling tired. And I want to try to address this problem by looking at what Jesus has to say on the topic of rest from Matthew chapter 12. And Jesus has three things to tell us about rest from this passage, which are our 3 points for today. So Jesus begins by outlining how our lack of rest may actually stem from a misunderstanding of the Sabbath, the day of rest, and what it's actually about. You see, the religious leaders of Jesus' day had surrounded the Sabbath with a whole bunch of extra laws, which Jesus smashes in this passage. So I've titled my first point, Smashing Sabbath Legalism. After clearing this misunderstanding up, Jesus then tells us what the Sabbath is supposed to be for. And I've titled this, Upholding Sabbath Principles. Jesus then concludes by showing us how to find true rest, the kind of true rest that humans were actually designed for. And I've titled this third point, Finding Sabbath Rest. But what this means is our goal for today is much grander than just feeling rested and rejuvenated. Our goal for today is to gain a deeper understanding of how to live according to God's design for us and our life. But we've got less than 20 minutes to do it, so let's dive in and look at smashing Sabbath legalism, upholding Sabbath principles, and finding Sabbath rest. And our passage begins with these words, verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grain and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath. So the Pharisees were sort of the religious elites of Jesus' day. They were sort of like the temple monks or the cardinals of the first century. And the Pharisees took God's law very seriously. In fact, so seriously that they came up with, get this, 39 different ways that you could do work to actually violate commandment number 4, violate the Sabbath. And those 39 ways included picking heads of grain or preparing a meal. And so the Pharisees take offense to what the disciples are doing in verse 1. The enormous irony of this, though, is that in their zealousness to make the Sabbath a day of physical rest, the Pharisees have actually turned it into a day of spiritual work. You see, every single religion on the planet, except biblical Christianity, says we need to earn God's favor through our spiritual work, through things like being a member of the right religion, or doing good deeds, or following spiritual disciplines, or obeying the law. And the Pharisees are doing the exact same thing. And that's why Jesus quotes Habakkuk 6:6. Have a look at verse 7. Jesus says, "If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent." So the context of Habakkuk, that Habakkuk quote, is God smashing the Israelites for focusing on the outward regulations of the law, right, sacrifice, whilst having lost the heart of the law, mercy, or literally loving kindness. And the reason they were focusing on the outward regulations was because they had become like every single other world religion, which says we have to work for God's approval, even on the Sabbath. And Jesus gives the Pharisees two examples from the Old Testament to show it's not about our spiritual work, all right? These are two examples of people who actually broke the letter of the law but are not condemned. So the first is from 1 Samuel 21, where David had to flee for his life from Saul, wearing nothing but the shirt on his back, right? And he stopped off to see the priest Ahimelech, and he asked Ahimelech for some food. Ahimelech said, "Look, the only food on hand is the consecrated bread, which the law says only the priests were allowed to eat." Yet Ahimelech gave David that bread and was not condemned. In the same way, the Levites work every Sabbath and are also not condemned. And Jesus' point is that like any of God's commandments, all right, honor the Sabbath is not supposed to be a spiritual work, a spiritual currency in which we earn God's favor. You see, the Bible, both Old Testament and New Testament, is the exact opposite of this. It is the exact opposite of every other world religion. You see, every other world religion says I have to earn God's favor through my spiritual work. The God of the Bible says your sin means you can never earn God's favor. So how about I just give it to you? Which is the gift of Jesus' death for our sin. Now you see the difference. Religion says if I perform, I am accepted. Christianity says, I am accepted in Christ, therefore I perform. Religion says, if I give something good to God, like my good works, he owes me. Christianity says, God has given me everything in Christ, therefore I owe him. And this is why Jesus slams the Pharisees' legalism. Right? As Israel's religious leaders, their zealousness to rule out any physical work had turned the Sabbath into a day of exhaustive spiritual work. As you can guess, this spiritual work was undermining the basic principles of the Sabbath. And so our author, Matthew, couples together a second episode with the Pharisees that allows Jesus, shows Jesus affirming the Sabbath regulations and reminds us of what the Sabbath is actually for. So we read in verse 9, "Going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus, they asked him, 'Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?'" Now, the Pharisees know what Jesus thinks, all right? The reason they ask this question is because they're not happy with Jesus' teaching overall on this, and they're trying to catch him out. As one famous admiral said, it's a trap. But the reason the Pharisees are not happy with Jesus' teaching is because they understand what his teaching is claiming. See, in verse 8, Jesus said this, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now, what does that mean? It means Jesus was there when the Sabbath was first created. Jesus is God. And this is why claiming Jesus was just a good teacher means having to ignore the evidence. Because a good teacher does not make claims like this. You see, when Jesus says he is Lord of the Sabbath, either he is a wicked liar or a complete lunatic that we should stay well away from, or he is Lord. And we need to submit our all to him. Now, the Pharisees thought the former, and that's why they're setting a trap for Jesus. Jesus, however, takes the bait and springs the trap back on them. Have a look at verse 11. He said to them, look, if any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Now, his argument is simple but decisive. If you would do work to help your animal out on the Sabbath, then why on earth would you forbid work to help people on the Sabbath? Because helping people is the whole point of the Sabbath. As one preacher put it, the Sabbath is about restoring the diminished, replenishing the drained, repairing the broken. So healing a man with a shriveled hand is exactly what the Sabbath was for. And the Pharisees' spiritual work of trying to earn God's favor was undermining the Sabbath principle of restoration. It shows that their hearts were just as shriveled as the man's hand. Friends, the principle of the Sabbath is that humans need rest. As a child, I used to watch the TV show The Transformers. It's about these sentient robots from another planet. And in one episode, the goody Transformers were helping the humans to prepare for an oncoming attack from the baddie Transformers. But being robots, the Transformers had to stop every 12 hours or so and go and recharge their batteries. And for some reason, I just remember this one little clip where one of the Transformers, who saw the humans as inferior, asked why the humans didn't need to stop every 12 hours to recharge. And this Transformer was blown away that these puny little humans could just keep working. The truth of it, though, is that humans do need rest, don't we? For example, if we don't get several hours of sleep every 24 hours, bad things happen, like falling asleep at the wheel. If we don't take holidays each year, bad things happen. A colleague of mine had to fire one of his assistant ministers a few years ago due to sexual misconduct. And this colleague said he saw the wheels start to fall off this assistant minister when he hadn't taken any annual leave that year for a whole 12 months. But on top of that, if we don't rest one day in seven, bad things happen. Studies have shown that divorce rates are noticeably higher among shift workers or fly-in, fly-out workers because they're constantly exhausted. But the reason Sabbath principles are so important to Jesus, the reason Jesus helped create the Sabbath in the first place, is because humans are designed to need rest. But as the Pharisees have shown, humans will never find this Sabbath rest until we realize that Sabbath rest is first and foremost a spiritual thing. And if we're being honest with ourselves, this is why we either don't slow down, don't take a full day off or a week, or when we do take a day off, we still wake up Mondays exhausted. The reason is that, like the Pharisees, we're still trying to earn our identity, earn our approval. See, the Pharisees said, if we follow these exhaustive lists of rules, then God will accept us and others will look up to us. Then we'll know we're worth it. But what that meant was they could never rest. Not even on the Sabbath. In fact, especially not on the Sabbath, if the Sabbath was one of those rules they were trying to follow. And again, if we're being honest with ourselves, we all have something in our lives that we look to try and earn our identity, to try and earn our approval. So, for example, some of us look to our career. We think to ourselves, look, if only I'm successful in my job, then I'm worth it. If only my colleagues or my boss sees me as competent or dependable, then I'm worth it. If only I perform well and get this promotion, then I'm worth it. If only I can be successful in this small business, then I'm worth it. But notice what we've done. We've created a spiritual type work underneath our physical work. Right? We've turned our career into the thing that will show either God or others or ourselves that we're actually worth it. And we do this with all manner of things, right? So some find their identity in being beautiful or desirable. You see, when people compliment my looks, then I know I'm worth it. Some find their identity in getting hundreds of followers on Instagram, right? I need at least 500 likes on this post and then I'll know I'm worth it. Some find their identity in money. When I make my first million, then I'll know I'm worth it. And some, like the Pharisees, find their identity in being a good religious person. If I can ensure I don't do any of those forbidden forms of work, then I'll know I'm worth it. See, the one big problem with this whole structure, though, is we will never be successful enough. We will never be beautiful enough. We will never be popular enough. We will never have enough money. We will never be moral enough. Why? Because the God-shaped hole in our heart can only be filled by God, not those things. And until we realize this, we will never find Sabbath rest, even if we are resting one day in seven. So what do we do? Well, look, it's quite simple, really. We need to let God fill our heart. And we do this by realizing that God's acceptance of us is not something that we achieve, but something we receive. And this is what Matthew is getting at in verses 15 to 21. So that he quotes an Isaiah passage. It's Isaiah 42, one of the suffering servant passages. Let me read just verse 22. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not stuff out, till he has brought justice through to victory. Now, the first thing we note here is that Jesus has not come as a military leader bent on conquest, right? Whatever Jesus came to do, he came to do it gently and humbly, right? He does not want to smash us. He wants to care for us and look after us. But the second thing we note is the way in which he cares for us is by leading justice through to victory. Now, what does this mean? Well, justice has to do with holding people accountable for their sin, doesn't it? Right? Our justice system in this country is designed to curb violence by punishing perpetrators. The problem is, deep down, we know we're the perpetrators. We know we don't measure up. Right, the reason many of us need compliments is because we know we're not actually beautiful on the inside. The reason we need likes on social media is because we know deep down we don't deserve that kind of popularity. And the reason we need to be seen as moral is because we know deep down we're not moral. The thing that is just out of this world, though, when it comes to Jesus, is that he knows all of this about us. Yet he still decided to take the justice we deserve upon his shoulders. But as our regulars know, the cross is Jesus taking all of our ugliness, all of our meanness, all of our sinfulness, all of our rebellion. And he's saying, even though divine justice says you deserve to be punished for those things, I'll take that punishment for you. And friends, when we realize this, when we realize that the God of the universe accepts us unconditionally, we find true rest. We no longer need to earn the approval of the serfs because we already have the approval of the king. Now, for those of us who have already received the Father's approval through Jesus' death, our problem is that the human heart is always pulled back into religion, always pulled back into thinking we have to show ourselves or our neighbours or our God that we're actually somehow worth it. And this is why many Christians still feel inferior to others. They have more followers than me. Many Christians still look down on others. I would never behave like those people. Or many Christians are still angry at God. Look at all that I've done for you, God, and this is what you give me. And notice what we're doing. When we say things like that, we are acting like every single other world religion. When Christianity is supposed to be the one religion that stands out. And this is why this is our application. Christians need to be clawing our way back to the gospel each and every week. And the primary way we rest of a Sunday is to be reminded at church of the grace of God. Right? We will always be pulled back a step in life towards religion. Church is our two steps forward. And if we miss our two steps forward, even for a week, that leaves us with nothing but work, doesn't it? And is this not what we want to avoid? I mean, do our hearts not cry out for rest? Do we not wish to just resign from our spiritual work for good and come to the God who pulls us out of the pit himself, heals our shriveled hand, soothes our shriveled hearts, and gives rest to our weary bones? Because, friends, when we realize we no longer need to earn our identity, it gives us true rest. We don't have to sneak in a few hours of work on a Sunday just to prepare a little better for Monday. We don't have to prove ourselves on the sporting field for Sunday sport. And we don't have to come up with Pharisaic rules as to why I skipped church this week. Oh, there was a friend from out of town. When we truly understand what Jesus has done for us, we can find the true rest that we were made for. Rest in the Lord.